Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Duties and Metrics Jackson team call on Monday, the 8th of October, 2012, at 1900 UTC. On today's call, we have Francisco Canizales, Cheryl Engen-Orr, Yovia Cahoon, Holly Raich, Olivier Cuffin-Lebon, Alan Greenberg, Sergio Salinas-Porto, Dejani Benzema, Devinon Pilatsing, Carlton Samuels, Rudy Vanzinic, Eduardo Diaz, and Cesar Cifuentes. If I've missed anyone, please let me know. From staff, we have Hariolos, Sylvia Duranto, and myself, Matt Asciani. If I could please remind everyone to state their names and speaking for transcript purposes, over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. This is our last meeting before Toronto. The aim is to at least quickly review what has been put into the draft rules of procedure for our section and to identify what we need to do going forward. There's not going to be enough time to go through it line by line, and I don't think I want to. The real issue at this point is to get any feedback that we need prior to, let's say, 2 days from now, but not much later, when we move this over to the draft rules of procedure from the sandbox. At this point, I believe, although I certainly may have made a mistake, that I have captured pretty much every decision we made in our previous discussions, and thanks to Eduardo, most of it actually reads as English. I hate to say his English is better than mine, but based on the experience of the last day or so, it seems to be the case. Thank you very much on that. The real issue, there's a couple of things highlighted which I want to mention as we go through it, and the real substantive part is not so much looking at whether I transcribe things properly, because there'll be plenty of opportunity to make sure that's done. Certainly if you notice anything, then please make a comment either on the wiki or email. The wiki comments on the sandbox are probably the best place to put this, if you have access. The real issue I think that we need to be concerned about today is what have we forgotten to talk about altogether. And as I was drafting some of this, occasionally things came up, and I included things which are sort of obvious that we had never talked about, but I don't think they're controversial at all. I'm a little worried that there may be things that we just never thought to talk about. I know in the meetings and administration, as I've been working on that one, there are a number of things which, you know, we just forgot. And I worry that there may be similar ones here. So what we're looking for in the next day or so is for everyone on the drafting team to have read the document, to read these draft rules. Don't focus on format as much as the content. Is there anything there that's wrong? And is there anything there that's missing? And that's really what we need to go forward at this point. The document, I think, is in reasonably good shape. It's a little longer than I thought, but we're still sitting at 5 pages, which I think is reasonable given what we're doing, and we have a lot more content than the current rules of procedure with regard to specifying rules and responsibilities and characteristics of people. So if there's not any specific questions at this point, and I'm not following the chat, so if there is something there, please highlight it. I'll first of all identify a few of the things that are in yellow. They don't necessarily. One of them is going to require some discussion. The other one, I think, is just a note to us, or the other ones. The first one is on the first page. It's following item 1.10.
Yep.
And it simply notes that the current position description is called position description for ALAC members and ALAC liaisons. It didn't capture the concept of other appointees. Since what we want to put in the rule of procedure is a specific title in this case, I would suggest that the ALAC, relatively quickly and before the rules of procedure are formally adopted, revise that document to at least change the title and make sure that it, you know, it adequately talks about other liaisons. This is probably not the right time to do an exhaustive update of that document, but just make it coincide with what we're talking about. So I don't think that is a draconian thing to do, but I think it could be done pretty quickly. Yes, Holly.
My suggestion, and I, sorry that I only read it last night, and I couldn't find out what I'd done. I think in the latest thing that I did on definitions, which I did do because it got a comment, that are you thinking there will be ALAC, and there is a, in the definition section, you've got ALAC members, the ALAC is, and it says what it's composed of. Is that what you were thinking? Because there are some sections there that deal with members, liaisons, appointees, working groups, and so forth. And I note that you've now got the XCOM as a leadership team. Doesn't matter. Is that what you're thinking of? Because that can be done easily.
What I'm talking about right now is simply that the position description that is an approved ALAC document, I'm suggesting that the ALAC, separate from the rules of procedure, but in synchronization with it, revise that document. Because
and
currently that document
that
does not refer to appointees.
No, okay, but do you expect that in the definition section, is my question.
There will be, any of these capitalized terms, ALAC members, liaisons, appointees, will be in the definition section, and I have, it wasn't in the critical path for this meeting, since the DSDT is not meeting this week, but I do have, as this has been drafted, I have kept track of definitions that I will be sending over to the DSDT to make sure they are captured.
Excellent, because I've already gone through your earlier document and done that. So the latest one,
yeah.
I think what's left is changing XCOM to leadership team.
Yeah, you may well have caught them all. I'm doing a parallel effort just as a double check.
Okay, thank you.
Eduardo.
Yes, this is a question. This is Eduardo. Are you suggesting to do this, looking at this document in Toronto or...
At this point, based on the level of progress on all of the drafting teams, I cannot see that the ALAC is going to approve a final set of rules of procedure in Toronto. If someone believes otherwise, tell me, and I'll work on this one as a higher priority to update the position description. But I can't see this happening as a complete, you know, document approved, signed, sealed, and delivered in Toronto. If someone disagrees, then I guess I should be told. So I don't think it needs to be done in Toronto. It has to be done very soon afterwards.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be an onerous thing. I just don't want to add another thing on the Toronto agenda if it's not absolutely crucial that it be done on that day. But we can do it either way, depending on how it turns out. Tijani.
Thank you, Alan. I too don't think that it can be ratified in Toronto. Anyway, I think that those drafts, when they are compiled in the one document, the rule of procedure, have to be put for the comment of the whole at-large unit before being adopted by ALAC.
That is certainly an issue that the ALAC needs to discuss. I don't think it's a topic for today, but if the ALAC decides that certainly will delay things a bit. By the way, regardless, even if we refer to a document that doesn't exist in the rules of procedure, it simply means there is no document to refer to and we have no position description. So I this isn't something we need to dwell on a lot, and it's going to be an easy problem to fix. Francesco had a hand up for a second, but then it disappeared. Nope. All right. Again, just highlighting the few things I had in yellow, there is a reference under 7.8 talking about the ALAC withdrawing appointments. I'm presuming this is going to be handled in the recall section of that the ESADT is doing. Cheryl, is that a reasonable assumption?
I think it is a reasonable assumption because it was listed on their subtitle T. to-do list. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure recall is the right title for that, but nevertheless.
But the intent, yeah.
Yeah, the intent is it should be there. Thank you.
The only other thing, Alan, while I have the microphone, Cheryl, for the transcript record, is you probably need under not this drafting team, but you're meeting an administration to pick up the matter of recalling a vote, which is not necessarily a position.
So a
recall of a resolution or reconsideration, which you were discussing in your last meeting, that's all.
Yeah,
so
let's leave that for tomorrow's discussion, but the way we...
I realise that, but it does bifurcate, that's all, yes.
Yeah, the way we did leave that one, just for the record, was we decided to be silent because we already have the mechanism by which we could do that should we choose. We can rethink that, but that is after laboriously listening to that meeting again, that is what we decided. The last highlighted one is a troublesome one, and this one I think requires some substantive discussion, and it's under point 7.10.5.3, right at the end. And it's the issue of thresholds by which the ALAC can remove an ALAC member. We talked about a two-thirds majority of sitting members required to do that. There are some implications in that, which as I was writing the words, I realized. The first is that under our normal voting rules, if a lot of people abstain, that two-thirds decision could be made by a very small number of people, as small as four. So I think that's a question is it reasonable that we would take such action with actually only four people voting to do it? The ways to address that is either we treat abstentions for this kind of vote as equivalent to no, or we do not allow abstentions. And since it's a secret vote, I think it is probably reasonable to say everyone needs to take a stand on it. But that's the discussion that we need to have here, because we end up with one of several alternatives. One is that a very small number of people can take action, and the second is that we either treat abstentions differently or don't allow abstentions. We have several people with their hand up and a tick. I'm not sure what the tick is, but Tijani, maybe after the people speak, you can tell us what the tick was for. Holly.
My suggestion on this one is simply to say, because removal is a pretty big step, instead of talking about percentages of votes, say of the number of ALAC people, there must be a percentage of positive votes, and that way you don't even have to worry about abstentions
okay.
and no's, and in essence you're assuming that an abstention is not positive.
That's right. That is treating an abstention as no, which is
yep.
something we do not do on normal votes. So that is the second option that I did give.
Yeah, but I'd say make it positive in that there must be two-thirds positive votes.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yep.
I understand how one would phrase it in a positive way. I'm just noting that
okay.
has the net effect of treating abstentions as a no.
Yes, it does.
Which has not been our practice for other votes. Cheryl.
Okay.
Right, Yavi has his hand up.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how Yavi got before you, but okay, Yavi.
Thank you. Yavi speaking. My point is... the dog is not from my side.
Sorry, that's a dog on my side.
Thank you. Okay, what I want to say is that the abstention... my position is that the abstention should not be considered as a positive... so we count the two-thirds for people who express yes. So this is my contribution, because the abstention, these people, they don't want to express themselves, so they don't have a clear position. So to take that sort of decision, I think it's very important that we count the real two-thirds and not the abstention within the two-thirds. Thank you.
Cheryl?
Thank you, Alan. Cheryl for the Transcript Record. I'm going to agree to some extent with the rationale of the percentages in the two-thirds, and I'm going to disagree wholeheartedly with that equating to treating abstentions as a no. So let me split up your sentence and slightly modify it. I think what, and I'll give you the rationale if needs be after I propose text. I think what it should say, because we are talking about the removal of an ALAC member. We're talking about something which we trust is going to be highly exceptional and quite serious. I think we should say not two-thirds of the sitting members, but at least two-thirds of the ALAC. Now, if that means one whole region's packed up its bat and ball and gone home, then yes, there may be an impasse, and yes, we may have to find some other mechanism, but that would be in itself extraordinary. I wouldn't equate abstentions to no's in this case, because it is confusing when you only do it in this case, and it is clear from the lack of understanding of what an abstention does or does not mean, that if we do that rule, which is what the current ICANN bylaws for the board are, then you have idiotic results where people don't have the intelligence to remove themselves from the meeting, even if it affects quorum, and end up doing an abstention, voting in the exact reverse from what their core values or their community wanted them to do. So that's something I'd like to avoid at all costs. If we say under these rare circumstances, that it has to be not just two-thirds of the sitting, in other words, you couldn't get only four people could make this decision happening. If we say it has to be at least two-thirds or a supermajority of the ALAC, then I think that's probably a safer way through it and
Cheryl,
avoids the option for confusion. Thank
Cheryl,
you.
Point of order. By sitting, I thought the word was clear. Apparently it isn't. By sitting, I mean the number of people who are, as of today, on the ALAC, not who are in the meeting.
Well, so I read that would normally, in the meeting.
Okay, now, that's why I'm specifying this. What the intent was of those words is if the ALAC is fully staffed, then the number of people would be 15 minus the one person we're talking about. If
okay,
there was
so
one vacancy, it would
more
be...
fully.
Pardon me?
Yeah. Fine. Now let me explain more fully. This is Cheryl again.
Okay.
Even if it is, as if your word sitting is equating to my, not the way I read it, which is sitting at a meeting, but you're talking about the whole ALAC, right?
Right.
The members of the ALAC in number. Then if you don't count abstentions as either yay or nay, you do not get to the threshold until you revote, revote, revote. And I'd rather have people revote, revote, revote until they have to vote yay or nay than have the risk of the confusion over an abstention being a nay. So it's
okay.
Forcing them to vote, but only because they'll just have to keep putting in polls for the next 3 days until everyone is worn down and decides one way or the other. And because this is an exceptional circumstance, I prefer to go that way than have the possibility for confusion and error.
Okay, so I think what you're saying, but I'm not 100% sure, is that the outcome for the outcome to be the person is dismissed, we need two-thirds of the number of people on the ALAC minus that person, so typically 14, unless there's a vacancy, two-thirds of 14 vote to dismiss.
Yeah, in other words, in the affirmative.
Okay, so we are not using our normal rule of a majority or two-thirds in this case of the non-abstention of the substantive votes.
Correct.
You're simply saying you must have two-thirds yeses, regardless of whether the others are noes or abstentions.
Correct, and only in this case.
I understand. Okay, I now know how to phrase it. The net effect of what you're saying is that abstentions are being treated, have the same impact as a no, but we will, of course, will not say it like that.
Correct.
That's exactly what I was saying, yes.
All right, next we have Eduardo.
This is Eduardo. For such an important meeting and the vote being secret, people should vote yes or no. That's it.
Okay, and, so you're saying we should not allow the concept of abstention for such a vote. We can't stop someone from walking out of the room, but we can stop them from voting as an abstention.
Right.
That also only supposes that your problem there, Eduardo, Cheryl here for the record, sorry, your problem there is that you're relying on people having a different voting format. Great value can be seen if there is a case to remove a member of the ALAC. And if the majority of the ALAC can't say yes, then that's a really interesting thing to then have to stop and discuss. A good chair in those circumstances, if they saw a pile of abstentions, would probably call another discussion before they took the next poll. Do you know what I mean? I think you lose useful data. You know, anyway.
Anyhow, it's just objections can be confusing. I mean, it can be confusing to know what objections mean in a vote, like a secret vote.
Eduardo, I think I can word it so that it is clear. As I said, I thought some words were clear. I will take it under advisement that they're not as clear as I thought. So let's go on to Johnny, then I have a comment.
Thank you, Alan. My kick was to approve to agree with you in avoiding any abstention. I totally agree with Eduardo, and I do think that if you allow the abstention, there will be always a confusion, always. And always people will say, yes, but I agree, but I don't want to remove anyone, so I don't vote yes, and I don't vote no because the person had to be removed. But since we are friends, I don't want to remove him. So
yeah. I
that if we don't allow any abstention with very clear explanation, it will be clear. And as Cheryl said, we do want to avoid any removal of any member of ALAC. And the procedure Cheryl described is perhaps a way to stimulate discussion more and more before voting. But at the end, if the person is merit to be on the ALAC, he will not be removed. And if he is not, he doesn't have this merit in the eyes of the ALAC members, he will be removed. So I don't think it is a good thing to stick with the confusion, because people always, the abstention is always a position that is not, if you want, that people take because they are embarrassed by feeling, personal feeling, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. A couple of comments. Number one, I don't believe the ALAC is ever going to use this procedure. You know, I'm not talking a guarantee, but I find it very unlikely that they're ever likely to use it. Number two, I think there will always be people who will say, I do not want to judge my peer, I will abstain. And by the way, you can stop someone from abstaining by not having it on a ballot. You can't stop them from walking out of the room. Walking out of the room, however, is showing their hand perhaps in a way that it's not clear we want people to have to do. Just for the record, two-thirds of 14 means 10 yes votes and 4 votes, which could be abstentions or no's, assuming it is a full ALAC at the time. So just to put it in perspective, that's what we're talking about as the number of necessary votes. I think we have a... I'd like to call for a consensus call that those who believe we should require for a full ALAC, that is 15 people who are sitting, who are active ALAC members minus the one person we're talking to, that would require 10 yes votes.
Hello?
Yes? Yes, Yovi?
Oh, please, can you repeat, please?
Yes, the question is, how many people believe that we should require 10 yes votes to remove someone? That means two-thirds of the people voting, if there are more than 4 abstentions or no's, the person would not be removed.
Oh, the vote would happen again.
Or, well, in that, as a result of that vote, what happens next, it would be up to the chair.
Yavi speaking, please.
Okay.
Can I speak?
So I've heard no arguments that, yes, Yavi, in a minute, I've heard no arguments that we should use our standard rule of discount abstentions and then do the calculation, which would allow a very small number of people to affect this kind of substantive decision. And I have heard a couple of suggestions from Eduardo and Tijani that we not allow abstentions. Of course, we cannot stop someone from walking out of the room. But I have only heard those two voices. Everyone else, I believe, has agreed that we should allow abstentions but still require a sufficient number of yes votes for that, for this to happen. Am I representing everyone's feelings correctly? Okay, I see no hands. I see no one call, no one putting an X. Therefore, we will go with wording which says, you know, put in the right way, but for a full ALAC, we need 10 votes to dismiss an ALAC member, and obviously if the ALAC isn't at a full complement, it's a slightly smaller number. That has the effect of treating abstentions as if they're no's, because they serve to reduce the number of yes votes. But we will not put it that way, but that is the net effect of the impact. Tijani, one hand up, and then we'll go on to other issues if there's no other hands. Go ahead, Tijani.
Yes, Alan. I prefer not to put 10, because if you have a vacancy on the ALAC, you may have someone who has gone and you have only 2 months left in the term. So it's not 10, it's always two-thirds of the remaining members of ALAC.
Yes, Tijani, that is what I meant. I was just using 10 as the example. If it is a full ALAC, the rule will be phrased as two-thirds of the number of people who are eligible to vote. Sorry, that was a shorthand, which I probably didn't say properly. All right. Therefore, we go ahead and we've made that decision. We are sitting at 34 minutes after the hour. Has anyone else had a chance to go over this with sufficient detail that they have any points they believe need to be raised, or have identified any issues which have not been sufficiently included here? Tijani, your hand is up. Is that a new one or an old one?
It's a a new one.
Okay, then you have this. You have the floor.
Thank you. I went through the document, and I have some points that I want to raise here.
Okay. If you could speak a little louder, that would be helpful.
Very hard to hear.
Yeah. 1.5, for example. We say that the member has to take part in all ALAC decisions. But we didn't say except in case of impossibility. As we said, for the attendance, for the presence, for the meeting. So
okay.
We have to mention it.
I'll find some way to word that.
Yes. 1.4 is included in 1.6.
Okay, hold on.
Because you say he must prepare and participate actively in the ALAC decisions, including face-to-face, etc. 1.4 is it's meeting. Sorry. Sorry, it's different. Okay. Further point.
Yeah, there is a little bit of overlap in 1.4, but the gist is sufficiently different that I think it's okay. But I'll look at rewording if necessary.
Okay, thank you. For 1.9, the last phrase I am not comfortable with when you say, or otherwise ensure that the ALAC and at large is well served.
Yeah, what I was trying to get at there, and we had some words, is there are plenty of there are plenty of times where someone may not be able to do their job through sickness or other things, and you have to make sure that your obligations are covered or somehow we make up for it. And that's what I was trying to get to. I'm not sure I have any better way of doing it. Yaovi, do you want to comment on this, or are you making another point?
Can I speak, please?
Yeah, on this point, or is it about something else?
Yeah. Oh, no, this one and another one.
No, okay. It's, we're talking about 1.9 right now.
Sure. Okay. On this point, 1.9, this is something during the past meeting I wanted to be, but probably the way to put, instead of saying the person is obliged, so we change that, but I'm happy with this one because I was explaining last time, like, somebody is, at the time for the election was ready, but when that person was elected, for some reason we don't know, this person could not perform. And this person could not understand that he can resign. He is free to go. Nobody will arrest him. But the fact that we don't have something like this in the rule of procedure, the person can just be silent. So this part I'm very happy with it, but the only problem is that instead of saying that person is obliged, we can maybe say that person, instead of saying is obliged, find something different. But this part is very important in the rule of, in the document. This is my comment.
Yeah, thank you. Tijani was concerned, however, with the last part of it, or otherwise ensure the ALAC and at large are well served. And again, I was trying to make sure that we're not having someone resign if that is not really doing the ALAC a lot of good. And there are certainly cases where people cannot meet their commitments for some period of time where we don't want them to resign. We would prefer to fix the problem some other way. So if someone can come up with better words than that, I'm happy. But I'm not quite sure what other way to phrase that, since it's a rather vague concept.
Yeah, please, can I speak?
Sure, yes, go ahead.
We can say that person could resign. Instead of saying that person is obliged, we can say that person could resign. So this is my suggestion.
Yes, but my question is about the part of the sentence after the word resign.
No, it's fine for me. This one is fine for me.
Okay, but it wasn't for Tijani. That's why we're talking about it. Tijani, can you come up with some other words for the concept? Otherwise, we'll leave that in this draft and look at it at the next pass.
Okay, I prefer to let it like this now.
Okay.
Until I think about the other text.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any other points?
Yes, I have. 2.2, I am really uncomfortable with electing a chair that is not on the ALAC. And after the AGM, he's not in the ALAC, we have to elect another one.
Well, I should point out we elected Olivier under those terms.
No, Olivier is on the ALAC now. Ah, yes.
And he wasn't.
I remember.
He wasn't at the time he was nominated.
But he had a reasonable expectation.
Yes, and Tijani is saying he's not comfortable with this anymore.
Alan, it worked with Olivier, and that's fortunate. If it didn't work, we will be obliged to elect another one.
We would. We would have.
I feel not comfortable with electing twice a chair because we elected him before.
Okay.
We can I think that now the nominating committee is delivering the list of appointees sufficiently ahead of the AGM, and the RALOs are electing their representative ahead of the AGM. So we know the next ALAC members, and we have to choose our chair among those members from the beginning. We don't have to select someone who is not yet on the ALAC, and afterwards we have to elect it again.
Okay, thank you. I'll go to Cheryl, but one very quick comment. The words in our current rules were written that way, and it ended up being very fortuitous because, for reasons that some of you remember, Olivier could not be named by his RALO ahead of time because he was sitting on the nominating committee at that time. And the situation is so rare that it will happen like that, and even rarer that it will then turn out the person isn't really on the ALAC, that I was just trying to put rules here that made sure we had a process in case of the double rare event. I don't think we really need to worry about it happening on a regular basis, not within our lifetime anyway. But Cheryl, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Alan. And Tijani, I hear what you're saying, and I understand it, but I'm afraid I personally agree more with having it in and allowing for it to do what we did in this case, which was to have a well-known and exceptional chair put into place. That having that as a positive is worth the very rare risk, as Alan was saying, of a negative outcome from that. You've got to remember that, of course, the ALAC still has to vote for that person, which in itself means that you've got to have the number of people in the ALAC who've already agreed that they believe this is the best person for the job. They also, we would have situations, however, where a lousy chair may be appointed. And I don't see the problem of a second vote having removed a chair because they're just not up to the job, or they've done a really bad job, any worse than, oh dear, never mind, this person did not get affirmed to be in the ALAC, therefore they can't take the role. I sort of see those, very rare things as, oh well, we just have to put up with it.
Yeah, I would think the situation, Cheryl, I would think the situation is more likely not that they don't get affirmed, but they change their job and they can't make the time commitment anymore, or they become sick, or, you know, a family issue comes up that says they can't make the commitment. And one could imagine that happening, but I wouldn't want to not pick the best chair. Chairs are hard to find to begin with because of the small possibility.
Cheryl, here, just in reply to that, that can happen to any chair or any ALEC member at any time.
That's
whether they're already on the ALEC or not. The other advantage, of course, Tijani is now with the 2-year chair term. That's something that, in a perfect world, also reduces the likelihood of having someone going to be put up for ALAC chair if they're not likely to be in the ALAC for the 2 years. They do have to have a reasonable expectation of being there for that length of time, and I think that's important. But the other thing, Tijani, with your points you were making about when NOMCOM makes their appointments are public, and when the regions make their appointments to the ALAC, that's still a crapshoot, to put none too fine a point on it. It's a roll of the dice as to whether or not that does or doesn't happen early enough. Anything could happen to either a NOMCOM or a region to make that delayed to a point where things like travel support could be quite compromised. And I also am aware that one of the other drafting teams is suggesting in the election appointment and selection section that the chair of the ALAC needs to be decided upon in advance of the rest of the leadership team, and that may need to occur a couple of months before the annual general meeting where the person would actually take their seat. So you could have a situation where you knew who the next chair of the ALAC would be for a 2-year term in June or July, which would be before even the earliest of a NOMCOM announcement in August, because they can't do it before August, and have them not take up their role until November or December. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, thank you, Cheryl. I did realize as we're talking that I have put together in 2.2 two separate concepts, and they really need to be separated, and I think that will relieve some of Tijani's angst and concern over it, because the second sentence of 2.2, which will now be a separate sentence, is a statement regardless of whether the ALAC, you know, the person was an ALAC member. If we are suggesting right now that, you know, Olivier has been nominated as chair for next year, he could still not be there at the end of the AGM for a variety of reasons. So whether he's whether one is on the ALAC at the time of the nomination or not does not really alter the fact that this, the second sentence of 2.2, needs to be there somewhere. So, I think based on what I've heard so far and my realization they should be separate points, that I think we have to leave that there, because I don't think we can get rid of that statement in any case. Tijani, next point?
Yes, next point is 2.3.
Okay.
I think that the following formulation, we say exactly the same thing, but it's very very much easier and simpler. Yes, a chair is elected for 1 year term, automatically extended to 2 each time the person remains to be an ALAC member for the second year. The first priority for the ALAC is to select the best person to be a chair.
I can live with that. Anyone else have comments?
Cheryl here. I have no problem with that. It's the same net effect.
Okay, we are talking 49 minutes into the call. All right, let me make a note of that. Tijani, do you have that written down somewhere, what you just gave?
Yes.
Could you send me an email with it in, please?
I will.
Thank you. Next point.
Do you want me to send you all the points? Okay, next point is 2.7, 2.71.
Yep.
Preside over ALAC, face-to-face or virtual meetings. What is written now is presides over ALAC meetings in person and or telephonically. If we are using the Adobe Connect, there is no telephone.
Got it. Okay. Well,
so it is,
send that to me also. I'll make a change.
Okay. I will do. Okay. 2.76.
Yep.
The chair is obliged to consult with the ALAC members. The ALAC members exist in the following phrase, which is the ALAC and other segments of at-large as appointed, as appropriate.
All right. The
so ALAC
the
member is twice here.
Yeah, the word "V" should not have been there. That was an error. But what I was trying to get at is, depending on the situation, the chair may consult with individual members or the ALAC as a whole.
Okay.
Okay, so it must be explained like
this. Doesn't read that way.
I'm sorry, Holly, I think you said something, but I don't know what it was.
I had just a question on the ALAC or ALAC members. It really would help if you just say the ALAC as a whole, because to me I read it ALAC members and then went,
okay, I will clarify.
Thank you.
Tijani?
Yes.
We only have 9 minutes left, so I don't know how many more points you have.
Okay. I have a lot. If you want, I will send them all together to you.
You send them to the whole mailing list to everyone if you can. But let's
okay.
keep on going.
Okay.
Does anyone else have any other ones they want to get in, or should we let Tijani go? Yaovi?
Yaovi speaking. Tijani talk about the 1.5, but I don't know if it was the same comment that I had in mind. The 1.5 is saying take part in all ALAC consensus decision and vote. My suggestion is to remove all and consensus. So that was my suggestion.
I think the fix to Tijani's problem was removing the word all. I do not believe we want to remove consensus, because that is how most decisions of the ALAC should be taken.
Yes.
Can I speak, please?
Yes, you're speaking. Go ahead.
This brings me to ask a question, because maybe I had a bad understanding of consensus. Because if my understanding is that if you say that I take part in consensus decision, for me it's like I agree in the decision. I agree with the decision. So this is why I said that.
No, okay.
This is my understanding. Yeah.
We are defining consensus decisions of somewhere in a different section, but consensus is defined as it'll be more specific, but it essentially says most people.
Exactly. So if it's most people,
it's not unanimous, but it says
okay.
It doesn't say you agree with the decision, it says you participated in the process.
Okay.
Even if you disagreed.
Okay.
You're certainly allowed to disagree. If too many people disagree, it's not a consensus decision. If one person disagrees, it may still be a consensus decision of the group.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you,
Danny. You have maybe 5 minutes, but no more.
Okay. Moment. Okay, so 3.6.
Okay.
You say that ALAC members occupying the role of vice chair agree to take on a heavier workload than the entitled ATL members.
Right.
I'd like you to specify that, because you specified for the members, for the whole members, and for the chair. 25 hours for the chair, how much for
yeah, the details for the chair, yeah, Tijani, the details for the chair are not going to be part of these rules. We just put a note there that we should capture it in another document. So all of the specifics will be put into another document. We're just noting here that there is a difference between what we're calling the vice chair and one of the untitled members. But the specifics will be somewhere else. For all cases, the ALAC, the untitled XCOM members or leadership team members, the vice chairs and the chair.
4.3, you say at the end, to the extent of that confidentiality rules of the TG allow.
Right.
You mean here that there is some information from the target group that the liaison doesn't have to report to the ALAC?
That's correct. For instance, the SSAC, some of their investigations are confidential and cannot be reported. Some of their process discussions are confidential and cannot be reported.
Even for the chair of the ALAC?
Yes.
If someone is sitting on the SSAC as a member, there may well be confidential things that are disclosed to that member which cannot be passed on to the SSAC. The same would be true for someone who is named as a liaison or an appointee to an external board. There may be confidential issues that cannot be relayed.
I tried to put my hand up, Alan.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Just on that, in fact, it exists even in cross-community work groups. In the DSSA, we have aspects of that which are strictly bound by confidentiality and commercial and confidence material. And if the current chair of the ALAC wasn't part of it, which he happens to be, he would have no knowledge of it, and certainly the rest of the ALAC should never.
Okay.
I mean, this is one of those issues that our only option is to obey external confidentiality rules or not send someone to that group.
Okay. Well,
yeah, you've got to be ruled by the target group.
Any other points you want to raise on the phone now? We'll look at all of the ones you put in on the wiki, though, or email, whichever you prefer.
Okay. So it's finished. If you want to adjourn?
Well, I just want to reiterate that I thank you very much. The kind of thing you're doing is what I hope all people will do. Not all the questions you have are necessarily going to result in changes, but it's important to identify things where the wording is not clear or where you think we made a big mistake. Some of these things we discussed a lot, and I'm not sure we want to reopen them immediately, but it's quite clear that we may well have erred in some decision or other. So please, everyone, if you have any concerns, raise them. The group is going to have to get together and make decisions on whether these are important issues, but I'll be glad to collate them and try to identify the questions on each section. But please go through these. If you don't, you may well find a year from now you read the rules of procedure and are surprised by what you see, and then find out you're one of the ones who agreed to those rules. So everyone, take the full responsibility, read them, and let's have your comments. From a personal point of view, as one of the pen holders, and I'm sure Eduardo agrees with me, we would far prefer no one to have any comments, and we have no more work to do. But I think our real interest is to try to get these right and not make our job easier. Any other comments before we adjourn? Happy Columbus Day to anyone in the U.S., Thanksgiving and those in Canada, if there are any other Canadians here. And the rest of you people who have to work today, sorry.
But thank you.
Given that I've had four conference calls today, I don't feel particularly guilty saying that. I have one more comment. As we have had these unending discussions and the unending meeting result notes, I sometimes worried about whether we really had done our job. And it was gratifying as I was trying to pull all these things together into real rules to see the extent that which we had addressed virtually all of the questions we were supposed to. Some of them I'm sure we missed, and a few we probably got wrong. But I thank you all for your amount of effort that's been put into this. Tijani, is that something you want to say something at the end, or is your hand still up? We'll give you the last word if you want it.
No, I have other points, but I will send them to the list.
I thank you, Tijani, and I thank everyone else in advance for the exhaustive comments you will all make. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Bye-bye, and see you all in Toronto in a few days.
Yes.
Or at least many of you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.